Some of the O'Hare shit has been like out of control lately.
You could just remove some from that statement.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 568 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined this week by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen,
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's hard to believe. It's already been a week. It's gonna when this comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been 3 days, and plenty's happened, so they would just stop.
Yay?
I don't know if it's a yay. Let's see. Go ahead.
Hence the hesitation in the yay.
Yeah, it's like the question mark yay. We had some follow-up about Delta. Last time we talked, there was a winter storm moving in to the Northeast. And how did things go for Delta?
Not very good. It took them 4 days to recover.
Was it mostly JFK that needed recovery? Or was it JFK and Boston?
I think it was JFK, Detroit, LaGuardia, and Boston. There's been articles that have popped up, and someone posted on Fire Talk about it. I can't remember who, but it's basically comes under a crew scheduling software issue.
Can't handle it?
It's partially that, and it's partially the union and Delta playing games and loopholes in the contract.
Which you mean, the pilots union?
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember because I read this a few days ago, but basically they have a way they can call people in off reserves, but they have to accept within, they have 12 minutes. There's a way to set up an auto accept. So you have 12 minutes to call in and actually accept. You get a tentative accept one if you do auto accept, and then you have to call in within 12 minutes to confirm it. So a number of pilots just set this. Well, if you get selected, if you volunteer, but you don't get selected, I guess you still get 1x pay versus 2x. So everyone's been what the pilots have started doing from what I was reading is they have everyone's on auto accept, and they all, you know, wait to call in. And by the time they've called in, it's probably been rostered, but then they get paid without actually having to do anything.
So is Delta trying to do things to prevent this?
And that doesn't sound like they wouldn't be getting the staff they need, but that just sounds like they're paying extra people on top of what they need for staffing.
Well, but that happened at the end of it. So because they were waiting, they were doing it one by one by one. They were calling down the line before an auto accept. That was adding to the delays because they would basically go down the reserve list waiting for someone to accept the bid. And so that was causing delays and cancellations because they weren't getting, they were going one by one. I cannot do this justice because I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I'll find the post on Flyer Talk. Very insightful.
So it took them 4 days to get people back in place. Do you have a total number, Seth, of cancellations, delays of Delta for that? Or is that, I'm putting you on the spot here.
Put me on the spot. I hadn't looked. I can try to call that over.
Oh, it's okay.
I think Delta was over 1,000 flights.
Wow.
More than United. So yeah. United had cancellations and Delta had a lot more.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I get like some of the, we've heard it before that the crew scheduling software that Delta uses isn't great or isn't good. It's not good at like actually getting people where they need to be when things go awry and flights get diverted or, you know, there's a ton of cancellations.
I feel like we're in a situation where all these systems were built for smaller operations.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, you know, if it's the same system they were using when they had 500 mainline planes instead of 1,000, like, you know, you had half as many crew, all these other things. Does it scale and how does it, you know, the math involved and the calculations involved in getting crew rescheduled and getting things rebooked and getting it all sort of re-rostered is not just linearly more complicated because of the growth in the number of people, number of routes, number of planes, where things are, all that stuff. So
I think the other part of the problem is, right, the contracts have gotten much more complicated than they were 30 years ago when that software was all written. And so I think that plays into it as well.
Like just like the rules on who can be where and what benefits they get and
yeah. Right. And all the loopholes.
Well, I also think like too, you gotta get people in hotels and stuff too. And if you're trying to do that on the fly, I think it just adds another level of complexity, right? Like what Seth's saying, you're now doing that for two times, three times the number of people you were before. So yeah. Not good. I'm interested to hear from any listeners if they ran into any Delta problems.
I the post was from JJ Glaze 77 on Flyer Talk. We can post it with the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, it's great. Some new stuff. So we're recording this on January 3rd, and there was a strike on Venezuela last night, this morning, kind of ish.
Yeah. Have you seen what the actual time of the events were?
I was seeing it live last night at like 11 p.m.
Your time?
My time.
So that'd be 2 a.m. Eastern?
Yep.
So here's an interesting thing, and, you know, trying to keep it aviation related. The U.S. published a bunch of NOTAMs.
Mm-hmm.
Noticed air missions, noticed airmen, depending on how you want to say it, indicating that several regions across the Caribbean and South America were closed to operations by U.S. flagged aircraft and airlines and pilots. And they were published at 0600 or 0603 UTC, effective 0600 UTC, okay. Which, if I'm doing the math right, is 1 a.m. my time or 10 p.m. your time.
Yep.
Which means the NOTAMs were published possibly
as
either
starting.
Just as or just prior to it starting.
Yep.
Which, on the one hand, cool, tell airplanes to get out of the way. On the other hand, did we actually, you know, tell the world we were doing this via a NOTAM before we actually, you know, people saw pictures of bombs?
I mean, I think that's happened before. I know like some of the stuff that's happened with Iran and Israel, there's typically NOTAMs filed before those. So, I mean, it was probably very clear what was about to happen, but
yeah.
I don't know that it's like unique.
I mean, what's interesting, United canceled everything in and out of Aruba.
Well, yeah. Aruba's like what?
I know.
Like 1,000 yards from Venezuela?
A little more.
Can see it from my backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine being there on the beach last night watching this all unfold.
Yeah. It's interesting, Seth. The other thing I saw was there was a bunch of like trading going on like an hour or two before.
Oh, yeah. Someone on Polymarket or whatever?
Yeah.
Yes, I know. This one definitely leaked to, like everything else recently from this administration, people are definitely trading on it. And it would appear that some have very inside information.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so have other carriers followed suit? I looked at Flight Radar briefly before we got on the show, and it looked like everybody's avoiding Venezuelan airspace, pretty much.
Generally speaking, Venezuelan airspace is empty. I'm actually looking right now, there is one flight. No, it's an Air Force flight. That would make sense. A U.S. government -8 200.
It's probably one of the, it's either the Special Forces planes, because there's Delta Force uses those types of planes. So.
Yeah, that call sign.
Yeah, that's definitely Special Forces.
Great. So they've got their tracking turned on over Venezuela. The other ones generally active in those airspaces would seem to be foreign carriers, so not U.S. airlines. I will say there's an American flight trying to get out of Georgetown, Guyana, went south and then out across northern Brazil and Colombia, and it looped back around behind Panama.
Wow.
That was a we got to get the heck out of here situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes more sense to do that rather than strand your people. And, you know, if you can make it happen, much better than stranding folks in Georgetown, right? I mean, that's the you know, trying to keep in our lanes here, the thing I see about this is you've got hundreds of flights canceled in and out of the Caribbean on the Saturday of New Year's weekend, one of the biggest travel weekends of the year. Each of those planes holds on average 150 to 180 people. We're talking tens of thousands of people whose trips and whatnot are screwed. And, oh, by the way, there's no slack in the system to make up for this, right? If you're running at 90-95% capacity or load factors on these flights, like how long does it take to clear that up? Do you start, you know, thinking about running rescue flights? Like, where do things end up? And it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of service in Venezuela, right? Like, from the U.S.
Venezuela is not, I'm not worried about, but the Aruba Curacao, the Anguilla, the Virgin Islands, like,
people coming home from their vacations.
Yeah, everything in the French Caribbean, all the, I forget if it's the Windward or the Leeward Islands, but like that whole curve that goes out, Trinidad and Tobago, even all the way out there, like that whole strip of airspace is covered by this closure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I did a quick scan this morning of what's going on, and there are a whole lot of canceled flights, right? You know, a couple hundred. So, and the ones that are still operating in most of those places are the foreign carriers with small planes. Like, you go look at this, like St. Martin had like 24 cancellations, and I believe that's all their mainline, you know, US-based service today.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. What was the call sign on that plane again?
Bat 86.
What?
Bravo. Tango. A dash 8200 registration. It has a reg on it.
Maybe. I thought I saw.
I'm wondering if it's actually one of the.
Yeah. N986 Hotel Alpha.
N986 Hotel Alpha. Oh, yeah. It's definitely. It's, yeah, it's Special Forces. And it's like electronic warfare, Special Forces.
Sweet.
CIA apparently owned. Fun. Good times. Well, I mean, I think it stinks for people trying to get home. Like, if you're trying to get home today, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. If you can get a ticket, get to Canada. The Canadian airlines are mostly still flying.
Okay. And then let's talk about...
Not that our advice right now helps people when they hear this 5 days later.
Yeah.
If you're still waiting...
5 days later, yeah. Spirit Operations. What is happening with Spirit? They're not dead yet.
They're not dead yet, but they're having a rough start to the new year. They've had a number of delays and cancellations, and it seems like they're out of reserves from staffing both pilots and FAs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so 2 days ago, they had 11% cancel rate, 38% delay rate. Yesterday, it was 14% cancel, 37% of the operation was delayed. And today, even before noon East Coast time, they have a 14% cancel rate and 10% delayed. And going back to not having enough spare capacity, this is just going to make things worse.
So, I mean, is this all because they don't have the people? Or?
A lot of people are calling in sick. And, you know, the holidays and what have you. So, but because of that, they're tapped into reserves, but they don't really have much in the way of reserves. And what I was reading earlier was, even though they were going to do layoffs and furloughs, they end up canceling them because so many people left by choice. So employees are jumping ship from the sounds of it.
Which, I mean, on the one hand, you would prefer that people are making this decision of their own free will.
Yes.
But if it ends up being more than you wanted to depart, you're in trouble.
And that might be where they are at this point.
I mean, do they get out of this? Like, I mean, this is enough delays and cancellations where this, I think it snowballs. Like, this is like the kind of thing we saw with other carriers years ago.
Well, look, it's low season after this weekend.
Okay.
Right. So the question is, how much patience do their passengers have? And what does it cost them to accommodate them? Like, are they going to pay for hotels and what have you, or leave people stranded, which only make it worse for them in some ways?
I mean, was it Sunwing a couple of winters ago that had a canceled flight on the last day of the season and just thought everybody good luck getting home?
Sun Country.
Was it Sun Country?
You know, because it was Mexico. They left everyone in Mexico.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was them or what Canadian airlines that did it, but yeah.
Good old Sun Country.
Good times.
What else we got here? We had a listener question. The Alaska is flying the MAX kind of everywhere now, out of all their different hubs, including Anchorage. And the question is about, could they do Anchorage to Tokyo on a MAX?
And should they?
And should they? I'll let Foz go first.
I don't know if they can do it, but should? I don't know about that. On one hand, like, yes, if there's enough demand to fulfill it, it's a lot better than backtracking to the mainland.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, do we really need the new Pacific model?
I like the reference.
There's definitely some new Pacific going on there. Northern Pacific, right? This is the bat shittery that was supposed to be 757s using Anchorage as a hub to and from secondary cities in North America and basically Japan and Korea. And I think they actually wanted a bunch of China, but they never announced those. And then COVID and the China thing all went to hell. So, yeah, I think I looked up, it's like 3,400 miles.
It's 3,433, and it's within the range of the MAX.
It's in the range, but it's when you have to ETOPS it, things start getting squirrely.
Can you ETOPS it without touching Russia?
Hence my comment, things start getting squirrely.
Yeah.
And I think maybe you can. You can. This is what I remember now from talking to the New Pacific guys. You can do it ETOPS without Russia. You can't do it non-ETOPS without Russia, which is what New Pacific's original plan was. They were going to have non-ETOPS operations because those are faster to get set up. And right, Alaska has ETOPS certification. They have them, and they have planes, those planes, you know, ETOPS certified planes that rotate through Anchorage just for the Honolulu flight, if nothing else.
So in theory, it's doable. I think the challenge is, you know, can you find a sufficient market of demand that makes it worthwhile? And is it based on onward connections, of which, again, there's a decent amount out of Anchorage? You know, would I fly Boston to Tokyo all in 737 Max in via on Saturdays via Anchorage? I mean, I would.
You would.
No, I would, but that doesn't mean there's actually a market for it.
No, if they were to do an island hopper through the Aleutian Islands.
Now you're talking.
Could stop at Dutch Harbor on the way.
Yeah. Dutch Harbor, Attic. Yeah.
Yeah. Sign me up for that. You know, it's, and, but, you know, the, and our listener, fair question, like, is it like a once or twice a week with demand to see the Northern Lights in the winter, which, again, New Pacific talked about that a lot, or just to go hiking in the summer kind of thing. And I think where you end up is it's a relatively expensive flight to operate, given its range and crew needs and international and all that stuff, but doable.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, it looks like it's only ETOPS 60 that they would struggle. Okay, what are the max certified for?
That'd be 120 or 138. That's what
I think they'd be fine.
Yeah, I certification, like, yes, they can do it. They just have to deal with, like, if you do it twice a week, like, how long, what's the crew rest when you get to Tokyo? Do you fly in, have the crew rest for 24 hours and bring the same plane back? Do you leave crews in Tokyo for 3 or 4 days?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, do you deadhead them back and forth on your 787 out of Seattle that's not getting all that many seats used? I don't know.
Hey, loads are up on Seoul and Tokyo for the months of the year. Yeah, they're up to like 79%.
Okay.
That's, but we'll see how that, we'll see if that continues. So
yeah. What are fares?
Still outrageous.
Okay. So. All right. Well, maybe it just took them a little while to get their legs under them and figure out how to sell it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that really affects their ability to rotate, I mean, like what you said, crewing, but also they have to avoid Russian overflight. So that does deviate from the Great Circle a little bit, because like the Kuril Islands basically stretch all the way to.
You got
to
follow the south, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's cool. I could see them doing it a week, once a week, maybe. Are they brazen enough to take that challenge? I feel like they just want to take the playbook from Delta and United, and fly 787s places. I'm not sure it's actually the right move for them, but I don't know. What do I know?
In the Alaska realm, if you look up Wales Airport in Alaska, which is closest point to Russia, on Google Maps, all the pictures are of the Cardiff Airport. Because I'm looking at, I'm like, why is there a KLM plane in Alaska? A city hopper plane. And as I look closely, it was Cardiff.
Nice.
it would be cool to do like you stop in Attic and then onward to Tokyo. That'd be sweet. Just don't know. I don't know if they would want to do that.
I mean, then what, you like your crew overnights in Attic instead and does this like the 3-day trip? You fly to Attic and then Attic Tokyo turn and then overnight again and then Attic home.
Yeah, maybe the deal is you get one of the abandoned homes on Attic as crew.
Instead of a milk run, it'd be a sushi run.
Yeah, there you go. I like it.
Oh, crab run?
Yeah. Attic's a really cool place. I would love to go there. It's very remote, though. yeah, I don't know. Did that answer the listener's question, you think? I mean, I don't think Alaska does it. I don't think they have the route staff that are thinking about things like that. I think they're more focused on what can we do with our long haul planes now that we've got them? Where can we fly domestically from Anchorage? And their focus for international stuff is still Seattle. That's the impression I get from them.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, should we talk about what we're doing for 2026? We know what Seth's doing as far as chasing status.
I actually want to talk about credit cards for 2026 also.
You want to do that now, or do you want to wait for the bonus? I think we should
talk about some of it. I'll do the credit card and the bonus. Let's talk about status now and credit cards and the bonus.
Okay. All right. So, Seth, are you pursuing status on anybody?
I have lifetime status on United and lifetime-ish status on JetBlue. So that's going to be a no from me, dog.
No from you. And that gets you enough places.
Yeah. And interesting, I do have the challenge / question of, I have two transatlantic VA round trip premium economy trips coming up. Mm-hmm. Which in theory is useful for certain amounts of credit. Not quite enough to make BA gold. I need basically a third one. But is that, or sorry, for BA Silver is 600 to your points, if I remember correctly. So the three would get me there. Is it worth crediting that to BA, or should I put that in a different One World airline? And last year, I had a similar plan lined up, and I was going to put it all to Alaska, but then one of them ended up being a flight on
level,
which didn't really count, and everything went to shit, and I just stranded a bunch of points in a lot of places.
You know it's not 600 tier points anymore for silver, right?
It's way more than now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or like dollar-based, whatever. Yeah, so even that's stupid, so good call.
I mean, I would probably put them still towards Alaska if you're going to use the Alaska points.
I mean, which is a very good question of will I ever use Alaska points, but...
Are you going to ever use... I mean, would you just credit them to Avios and use Avios in the future?
I mean, the one I use mostly is American still.
So then credit to American. Is there a downside to that?
Credit to American, then just get a credit card to get the rest of the loyalty points for your status.
Yeah. I like to cut of Foz's jib.
That's
well, and we'll talk about the credit card options then when we get into the later end of the conversation, but it seems like that might work.
And then Foz, what are you chasing? Anything?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
You better figure it out. You got a bunch of stuff scheduled.
I know. I mean, I've got my the global services. That Star Alliance is kind of taken care of. I've got Alaska Titanium for the year. I just don't know if I want to do it anymore.
The Titanium?
Yeah. I don't see, like, they keep raising the bar, and they still haven't announced all the changes. So who knows how that's going to play out at the end.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my concerns, is they haven't said what's actually happening next year. And when, well, they've said what's happening, but they haven't said when it's happening. And they've said, okay, it's 135,000 to make Titanium for 2027. And I feel like the changes that are coming are really trying to push people to spend, which I don't think it surprises anybody, but I wouldn't be surprised if 2027 changes again and they go to pure spend, no distance. Like I wouldn't surprise me at all.
The problem is for Alaska, then they are only really serving the people on the West Coast.
Oh yeah, totally. I think that's the thing that they don't get. If they go to that model, it's gonna.
I think the only way that makes sense is if they can say almost no, they have to come out like in, you know, 6 months from now or whatever and say no one chose this one, so we're getting rid of it, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, changing it 6 months, 9 months after you just established this new thing is pretty poor behavior.
I think the thing that people have to remember is if you go with distance based, there is no class of service bonus on the distance based if you book through Alaska. So,
which is just the opposite of what they did last year.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cause they were giving you these crazy bonuses.
Yep.
And now they're taking that away. And this is the thing that's driving me nuts about Alaska, is they're going from one extreme to the other and they're not being fully transparent about it. Cause all they keep saying is later in 2026. So halfway through the game, you're going to change the rules.
Yep. Yep. And then I don't think any of us fly Delta, but it doesn't seem like Delta's program has changed much. None of the qualifiers or anything. I have considered flying Delta. I don't know that it's for me. Just from a location, I could use Seattle, but it's still just as chaotic.
Yeah.
You could use Salt Lake.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've talked about just going back to United and flying United more.
I think with United, what I would say is we need to see how these dynamic upgrades for plus points come out.
And like what they actually do and how easy it is to get them.
Yeah, how badly they bork it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, I'm not like super enthused. I think I shared with, you guys, we've talked about this on the show before. Calling BA is like I hate it. I'd rather have my teeth pulled. Like spending hours on the phone with BA to get something simple done is just, it's really infuriating.
Something simple you should be able to do on the website.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'll tell you, you should be able to do it on the website. That's why I have to charge you for it. Of course you can't, but.
Yeah.
Website also not something they're good at vis-a-vis dates pickers.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
For those of you who don't know, when you're searching, I think, is it award and revenue?
Award and revenue.
When you're looking for flights on the BA website and you pick a date, there's a very high chance that the search results will be shown to you one day later than
Blazer. Yep. Or one day before.
One day earlier, yeah. So you want to depart on Thursday and you click Thursday in the date picker and then you hit go, it will show you Wednesday flights.
So every time that happens, in the back of my mind, what plays through is Clippy popping up going, I think you meant the next day.
It looks like you're trying to book a flight. Can I help with that?
Would you like help with it? No, get out of here. So yeah, I just don't. Yeah.
And for those that don't know, Clippy is an old Microsoft thing.
I gotta get into that.
We're having to. Oh no. Yeah. So I just haven't enjoyed that experience, and I feel like the integrations between the Star Alliance carriers is better. Something interesting that someone brought up though was a lot of these airlines now aren't releasing reward space or significant amounts of reward space to their partners, even if they're in the same alliance. Like, they're very small amounts of award space going out.
Yeah.
And it gets sucked up very quickly.
That's why, based on the dynamic pricing of awards, you don't, you know, if you want to maintain that value of your seats, you keep most of it at home.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of this feels like we're in this weird spot. And I think flying, if it becomes worse, I think flying, especially in premium cabins, is like going to be just for people who have a lot of money.
There's another aspect in regards to the awards, right? What's happening is, and we've seen this with Air Canada and Lufthansa particularly, there's side deals being negotiated with other carriers for better access to inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your standard defined intra-alliance settlement rate, which is what most of the carriers are backing away from in releasing inventory into that. But certain carriers are getting more access because they're willing to pay more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they do it with specific carriers because they see demand on a specific carrier.
Or they can negotiate the reimbursement rate, right? Remember, this like goes back, again, we're too old and we've been doing this too long, but y'all remember when Singapore Airlines awards dropped off the United website? And it was because Singapore wanted more money for reimbursements. Like, if I remember correctly, the contract wasn't up yet. So, like, United had a couple more years at whatever the rate was. And Singapore wanted more, but anytime because it's an auto ticket online ticketing thing, anytime United wanted to add a new airline or change anything there, all of the other airlines sort of had to agree to the new rules, is how I understood it explained. And so Singapore's like, no, we won't sign off on that. So you can't auto ticket ours. You have to manually ticket them, or like you can't add other airlines, you know, automatically. It has to all be done manually. And United had to pull them offline because of that. And eventually, then there was finally a detente and an agreement, and they signed some new co-share, feed, whatever agreement, and everybody was happy again, and they were suddenly back online. But presumably, it also changed the dollars about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this is just it's happening everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a lot less fun than it used to be.
It's a game, and the game is almost over.
Yeah. Yep. All right. We're going to talk about some bonus topics. We're going to talk about American and DFW. We're going to talk about Chicago and a little fire and Seth's credit card dilemma for our Patreon supporters. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.